You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 129. Today is Thursday, March 7th. Just under 2 weeks, Steve, from opening day, at least opening day light. Very excited to be talking fantasy baseball with you guys. We are back on the weekly schedule, and we've got a fun show today where we are talking ADP bumps from February to March and whether or not we are buying or selling the ADP bumps. Always a fun time of year, Steve. We've got a lot of drafts in the works right now. I think I'm rounding out all of my live leagues, unless you twist my arm and we do like another best ball or something. For the most part, we got TGFBI wrapping up. Raz Slam is kind of in the early rounds. You and I are both in that. The home league is last, and you save the best for last. So my draft for that is in a couple weeks, the day before, so the 19th. So very, very exciting. You know, I don't want to steal the quote from you, Steve, but March every year gets us pretty fired up, and we got the weather to match this year. How's it going, man? Good to be back on the show with you.
Yeah, it's great. This is officially the start of draft season. I think now with TGFBI, that's sort of the kickoff, and Podpalooza and all the great things that Justin Mason does. It's still, you know, kind of amazing to me that I'm even in that league, just as someone who's loved fantasy baseball and follows all those guys forever. I've done it for a few years now. I've never done very well, but it's still an honor to be a part of that. And I think that's the official start of draft season, but that's like right before March. Like once we're here, like everybody's home leagues are coming up. We're in the middle of important drafts, like, you know, all of the live NFBC main event drafts go on, I think, like next weekend it is, like the 15th, 16th weekend. And
in Vegas, boot,
we get, yeah, in Vegas. I think they do a few in New York too. And to boot, we got some real baseball that matters in like a little over 2 weeks too, which is a nice little added bonus there. I'll be drafting my home league after that, so we'll have, I guess, like a free look, we've sort of called it. And not to get too deep into it, but Vlad Sedler of FTN gave a good little nugget. It's like, if you have drafts now or in like TGFBI or whatever, just filling your drafts, like in the last rounds, take a dart on a Dodger or a Padre, because you kind of get extra games and then you can just fab them the next week. And yeah, sure, it's only two games are they playing there? Three games? I'm not sure if it's even a full three game series. But hey, you never know, that random hold or strikeout could help you in the long run. Sort of a way to get extra games there if you have some Dodgers and some Padres and maybe guys that you wouldn't necessarily draft at the end of your drafts. But still, yeah, like this is it. It's totally different. Like the draft season, the process you go through, the ADP is totally different. That's why I know we did like an ADP mover show recently, but March sort of is the baseline for when most people who only do one or two leagues draft, and for when like the big money leagues and your home leagues are drafting. So I think it's important to look at this, like, you know, to quote, I've quoted him many times on our show, but to quote John Rothstein, this is March, you know,
there it is,
ADP, like that's what it is. It's totally different. There's different things that go on, and I think it's important to look at this through the lens of how we're reacting to these moves and what to do. Because a lot of these guys are guys that we talked about and liked, but those opinions may change depending on their new price.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. We got probably like a dozen names, so we will get to all those. But for you guys, like I said, we'll be back on the weekly schedule, so you guys can find us on the main Pitcherless main feed. Shout out to the Pitcherless Podcast Network, winning Steve the Fantasy Sports Writer Association Podcast of the Year. So I think we got a small share in that, right? A split as contributors. And we'll take
Can
that
we call ourselves an award-winning podcast now? I think we can, right?
On LinkedIn, we can, Steve. We absolutely can. Now, we got to take that victory lap because we're also taking an L today. because for the second straight year on the baseball pods bracket, which is great exposure for fantasy podcasts around the industry, and all in good spirit. But last year we got a rough seed, and this year we got the 8 seed, and we felt better about that until we saw we were going up against what podcast was that?
The Craft.
Featuring
I don't know, you ever hear of these guys?
Eno Sarri? And then Nick Pollock. He's on the pitcherless team. So yeah, we had an early lead there, but luckily it's still
We should have like screenshotted the, you know, like how people screenshot the standings as a joke when you're leading whatever main event league
first game of the
season in April. Yeah. Like we should have, when I sent you that this morning, I guess we should have
55 to 45% is not bad. And, you know, like we were joking before the show, always great when, Saris, who we view as kind of a godfather of the industry, gives you a retweet with your podcast on there. So you guys give us a follow if you're out there at Wins Above Pod. Give us a review rating before the start of the season, goes a long way. But without further ado, Steve, let's jump in. And first ADP bump. Now, I guess just to set the ground rules, we were looking at all of February ADP versus this first week in March. So we'll kind of cite that along the way. But the first one with a kind of a deeper look here, the February ADP was 619, and this guy has moved 183 spots up to 436. So still very deep, probably deeper than most of the home leagues, but very much on the radar for like DC 50s, some of those best ball type of leagues, and the ability to possibly rise into home league relevance throughout the rest of spring training. It's James Wood, 6'6" outfielder for the Nationals, second round pick. Looked really good in Double-A last year, but at least for me, Steve, a little bit under the radar because it was Double-A. Power speed combo, and so far he has been red hot in spring. He's got 3 homers. He's a steal. There's videos on Twitter of him running first to third. Looks very fast. He's hitting 474. I know the strikeouts were part of the issue last year at AA. I think it was a 33% K rate. And so far, at least the tweet I had seen was, I think, four strikeouts and 6 walks, but less strikeouts than walks. So a really good sign there. Talk to me about James Wood, Steve. This guy wasn't really on my radar. I don't know if you know the guy or, you're friends with him, you grab coffee with him, any of that stuff. Let me know what you're thinking about James Wood here.
Real quick, just to backtrack real quick, just a little bit into how the sausage was made to how we got this nice little spreadsheet with these risers and some
Steve's
fallers.
Spreadsheet. It's good,
maybe
good
maybe spreadsheet. If we have a time at the end of the show, we could talk some interesting guys there. But it was, I think there's been 38 drafts in March so far that have been used from the sample, and 251 from February. Decent amount in March, but there are a lot of differences, right? Like a lot of those February drafts, it's everything. And I kind of wanted to capture that to kind of capture the differences that go on between March and February ADP. Because when you're in that draft room, if you're in NFBC's draft room, which is what this ADP is, like, it's going to be all of the drafts, right? So you just have to be cognizant of, hey, February is more draft and hold season. What sort of changes go into now, you know, weekly move, fab leagues, and how do people change their approach there? And also another thing that I did, rather than just look at the raw difference in ADP, I put on a percent difference. So that kind of captures large moves, even in the smaller ADP moves. Like, you know, we have a guy on here who dropped from, you know, a pick 100 to pick 80. And sure, that's only a 20 pick difference, but it's a 27% move, right? So it was just a way to capture more of the ADP pool rather than just looking at guys like James Wood, which is important, but, you know, a 100 pick drop from pick 600 to 500, we might not necessarily care about. And that might be a smaller percentage than, like, you know, a drop of like 50 points in the pick 200 range, right?
Yeah, good point.
So I just wanted to look at that, and that's just a nice, interesting way to sort of dissect this ADP changes. As far as James Wood, I'm definitely interested. I believe he was part of the original Soto trade between the Padres and the Nationals. He went back as one of the main pieces from the Padres.
So C.J. Abrams?
Yeah, I believe C.J. Abrams was involved, and Wood was one of the prospects. And he had kind of, and you know, I'm not comparing him to this guy, but he's gigantic, right? Like, he has that Judge build to him. He's 6'6", 230, like, runs well, has a 70 raw power, 80 future raw power, 60, 50 speed, like, tooled up beyond belief. The hit tool is a little concerning. There definitely is a lot of strikeouts. But again, and I'm not trying to say he's Judge, but there was another guy who was a large human being who had troubles with strikeouts even throughout the majors that kind of tempered the expectations, even when he did have that first go-around that wasn't too successful in the major leagues, only to explode onto the scene the next year. So, sure, I get the caveat that – or not the caveat, but – the argument that you could just look over at that 34% strikeout rate in AA and sort of dismiss him, but there is sort of a case study for how this profile matures and can cut down on the K rate a little bit. You know, he did run K rates in the upper 20s, which is sort of what he would need to do to have, you know, success and be a really good fantasy player. Albeit at the lower levels of the minors. But the tools are legit. I mean, 18 homers in 87 games, 10 steals, walked 11% of the time too. And I think the most exciting thing to me, other than the plate discipline, which is something that sticks in spring training, right? Your plate skills, like the rule of thumb, anything where the denominator is a pitch and not necessarily an at-bat, as far as and that goes for like strikeouts and walks, it's more useful in spring training. That's why plate discipline is one of the things that is stickier from spring training stats. But despite that, I think the most interesting to me is that he is leading the Nationals team in spring training at bats. Like, so the Nats are really want to get a good look at him. That was kind of tempered.
That's a good indicator. Yeah.
Today, when the Nationals signed Eddie Rosario. And it was already a long shot that I think James would be on the opening day roster. And it became even more of one when they signed Eddie Rosario. But still, hey.
That's still Lane Thomas, Rosario, and who am I forgetting?
Victor Robles.
Robles.
Yep. Yeah. So there is not as clear as a path for James Wood right now.
But also, it's not like the Nats, you know what I mean? Like, none of the, I mean, how big of blockers are any
and
of those guys?
If there's any team that could use a pick from winning Rookie of the Year, it's the Nationals, right?
Yeah, I get some Joe Adell vibes, honestly. Like, that kind of could be a 230 guy, but power speed. We'll see, but I think that late in the draft, if you're in the right league, you're looking for anything that could pop. So yeah, I like it. It's one to just keep watching, right? And it's a great point on the plate discipline is probably going to say the most about his long-term development as a player. And if we care down the road, even for dynasty or next year's redraft, things like that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, if there's still 3 more weeks of spring training games, like, he could force himself onto the roster if he continues to hit like that, even if they do, you know, have Eddie Rosario currently as a minor league deal, or at least on roster resources, a non-roster invitee. So, you know, maybe there is some room for wiggle room there for Wood if he continues to absolutely destroy the ball in spring.
Well, a guy who's equally as kind of young and exciting, more exciting, you would say, and much more relevant, his ADP's jumped up from 150 down to 112, and it's Wyatt Langford for the Rangers, who Just got drafted last June. It's a name that I feel like we've seen in like the Discord servers, but to think that we might be seeing Wyatt Langford this season is super exciting. 70 power, 70 speed guy. So it makes sense with how shallow outfield is that this guy's getting pushed up to that pick 112 ADP. Kind of feels like this year's Jordan Walker. He's off to a really hot start in spring. He's got hit three homers in 2 days. So he had a double dong on one of those days, batting 350. But in terms of last year, we saw so little of him, Steve, that it's kind of tough to make too much sense. You know, at any stop of the minors, he didn't have more than 24 games. Now, during those stops, he had OPSs that were over 1,000. So it's really encouraging to just kind of project him out. But yeah, in terms of the actual projections, ATC has him for 108 games with a 258 average, a 337 OBP, and a 447 slug. So 17 homers in 108 games. This probably could be a 25-15 guy, which seems like it's well worth a pick at 112. What do you think of Wyatt Langford here?
It's exciting. It's exciting. Even before the strong performance in spring, there was a lot of hype around him. I mean, the fact that he was drafted just last year and played at four levels, if you want to include the three games he played at complex ball, that's unheard of to go from there to all the way up to AAA in your post-draft year. Sometimes those guys don't even play. Right, I know them more so for pitchers, but even for some hitters too, if they had like a long college season or something like that. And on top of that, there was also the fact that there were some articles, I think, on MLB.com that like Wyatt Langford was almost on the World Series roster. Like he was that close to, you know, it was like one move away from having him play in the World Series in his draft
Evan
year.
Carter.
Yeah, Evan I mean, Carter's Evan Carter got called up and was right? instrumental in that. Like, and there was also talk that Wyatt Langford was extremely close to playing. Like, that's how ready he is and how much Texas believes in him. So another guy that's extremely tooled up. And for a projection system to believe in a rookie like this, that kind of makes me want to throw any preconceived notions or any hesitation about drafting a guy who was, you know, a rookie and still not necessarily guaranteed play time. But to have projections on a rookie with how often projections just rightfully regress rookies and know and account for the fact that it's very, very rare for any rookies really to have that impactful of a season. For like the average to be like 250-20-20 or 250-20-16, something like that is the quick math looking at all the projection systems on Fangraphs with like an 800 OPS. That's just incredible yeah. to me.
I mean, Zips has him for 98 RBIs. Like, what?
Yeah, Zips has him playing 140 games. Which, you know, if he does in that good lineup and he hits 264 and slugs 49, yeah, he's going to have 98 RBIs. That Texas lineup is amazing. So I don't have a share yet. I wish I had a share at the February ADP of 150, but I think I still probably should get a share at ADP 112.
You know what's funny?
Like who are the outfielders going around that range that
yeah,
are the would you rathers? Like
so
Jordan
Teoscar,
Walker.
Yeah. Teoscar, absolutely I would take him over Teoscar.
Agree.
Yes on Santander. Yeah, Jordan Walker.
That's going to be a tough one for you because you're Cardinals fandom now.
Yeah, I mean, this is exactly how excited everyone was for Walker last year, and I think Walker showed that he's good, and he already hit a triple off the wall this spring training as well. So, I don't know. It's just there is the unknown with Langford, and it has been a minute since it seems like Acuna and Correa and like all these, you know, prospects were kind of falling out of the sky and being major league all-stars. It seems like we've had some misses recent enough to where it doesn't feel so automatic. So, you know, I'm a little bit reserved with Langford, but I love it for, like, Steve, it's coming up for my pick on Raz Slam, and I will probably either just spring for Wyatt Langford, or, and I know we're going to be talking later, but I have
yet we kind of glossed over that. We're in the same Raz Slam, not just in Raz Slam together. We're in the same league competing against each other.
Same league, yes. And right now I'll get a pick before Steve does, so the table talk is all there for me. But I might go either Reagans or Wyatt Langford because I got so close to winning last year that this year I'm kind of like, let me just go for like total upside in terms of like the approach. I think I've gone like 7 hitters, 1 pitcher. So I definitely want to have some fun with some of these.
Yeah. Kind of in Raz Slam specifically, and in sort of the draft and hold or best ball that it is. It's not even a draft and hold. It's best ball where it sets your lineup for you. I'm really taking to heart. I want 2 things. I want plate appearances or innings. That's why 2 of my first 5 or 6 picks were Corbin Burnes and George Kirby, guys that I just think will get a ton of innings. I know Kirby's strikeouts aren't there, but I think, you know, and even his innings totals, like I think it was like 190 last year, but Kirby just seems like a guy that is going to give you innings and will make up for any of the lack of strikeouts with his quantity. And then also guys that I like I really like George Kirby. I took Ellie in the second round. I took CJ Abrams, guys that I think that will play a lot. Yeah. And then guys that I think are fun. So that's kind of my approach for Raz Slam specifically in that best ball cut line format.
The weird part about Raz Slam is that it's a points setup. So the pitcher total points never look as high as like the hitters next to him. So it's tough for me to like invest in, like, that's why I went with a catcher with William Contreras. Yeah. 'Cause I was like, oh, we got to fill 2 catchers. Yeah. It's point specific.
Did you do that last year too when you had such a good run? Did you fade pitching that early?
So last year I was pretty balanced, to be honest. The main difference, to your point, was a focus on volume, like rather than picking like Kyle Manzardo, right? Like going with somebody who's much more oatmeal-y, but is going to get plate appearances like out in Oakland or something. So yeah, that'll be hilarious to see how that league pans out.
Going back to Langford, I think I would rather have him than the 5 immediate guys going ahead of him in ADP.
Which are? Can you list them?
Because Spencer Steer.
My ADP looks weird. Yes, I would too.
Saya Suzuki.
Yep, same.
Nick Castellanos.
Ooh, Castellanos is tough. He's one of those ones where it's like, the Savant page doesn't look good, but back of the baseball card. That one's pretty close, but okay. I'll just play along and say yes, because the speed.
Castellanos, just the chase rate and the strikeouts are too concerning to me. I think that despite the fact that he had 30 homers last year and good counting totals, and we'll probably have that again.
The totals is where, yeah, because Langford's projected it.
I think there's more batting average floor. Where it's a lower floor than you would think, and the whiffs just concern me. The next guy is Jordan Walker, which is close.
I
again
see it. Yeah, you got the speed.
And then this one is probably Langford. Tough. It's Brian Reynolds, but I think I would definitely go Langford over Steer, Suzuki, Castellanos, and probably Walker.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So that's, like, just for you guys listening, circle it, because right now when you actually just look at Langford, like I'm in the draft room right now, to your point, Steve, and when I look at Langford, his ADP listed in the draft room is 144.
Yeah, that's part of it.
And
this,
we're talking about him at like pick 100. Uh-huh. So it's a really good example, and yeah, he is going off right now. So watch it closely. We've got more on the way, but first we got to take our first ad break of the show. We'll be right back after this. So, Steve, next up we got a guy that I feel like we're playing chicken with a little bit. I know you've planted your flag, and then I've gone draft by draft and said, oh, wait, this is actually one of my top share guys as well. Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who, of course, is having all the buzz out there in L.A. with the Dodgers with Ohtani. He's filling up all the videos on, you know, MLB TV, things like that. His first outing looked really, really promising, where the splitter was, he was just sitting batters down. And I know, speaking of Eno Saris, he was one that really caught my attention listening to Rates and Barrels, where he was saying his splitter should just walk into the league as one of the best splitters in the league. So kind of Kevin Gausman with a curveball. So that's where we're so excited about Yamamoto. He looked great his first outing, 3 Ks in two innings. And then today he got roughed up quite a bit by the White Sox, gave up 5 runs in 3 innings, did have 4 strikeouts, which the swing and miss stuff looked pretty good. His interview with the translator, it was mainly talking about control and that he was trying some things out. So I don't know how much we read into it, but he definitely, you know, you don't want to see giving up 5 runs against the White Sox. Are you concerned about this at all? I know we actually have him as an ADP riser because the buzz is just so huge. He's gone from pick 44 up to pick 34. So right in that like Pablo Lopez type of mix, which we hate to see, Steve, because we want to keep him closer to like 45, 50. But are you worried at all?
I'm not worried. I'm almost hoping that this may take some of that helium. Off of this crazy rise that he's had in ADP. Like, I just went back. I have 3 shares in my 3 completed teams, my 2 other teams that are currently drafting in TGFBI and RadSlam. I won't have Yamamoto shares, so I'll have, you know, 3 out of 5. But I just looked at where I took him, and it was all from, like, pick 43 to 50. So right in that previous February ADP, I don't, as much as I like him and as much as I think, you know, he's one of my favorite pitchers, I think, in the draft season, I don't think I would take him if it meant having to take him in like the second or early part of the third round. I liked him much better in that fourth round range. And I'm not really concerned at all about the spring training start. Like, you know, it is one start, as much as, you know, the first start looked amazing. You know, it's 1-1. Like, the first start looked absolutely incredible. This one was horrible. Like, okay, we can cancel each other out. But I'm hoping that maybe there's some recency bias and that kind of bumps down to the pick 40 range after that shellacking that he took yesterday. But I doubt it. But I think that new price of pick 34 would be too much for me, despite how much I like him.
Yeah, I agree. I was just looking, coincidentally, Steve, I'm also 3 out of 5 leagues in my TGFBI.
We do share the one.
On one of those leagues, yeah. On TGFBI, I got him on pick 50 overall. So, yeah.
Oh, nice. That's pretty good. He was bumped up, I think, into... I could pull that up now for.
Yeah, for I got him after Logan Webb. Just before like Tarek Skubal, Freddie Peralta. But yeah, probably like.
Yeah, SP, he went pick 41. In my league for TGFBI, so a little bit earlier, but don't know if I would have grabbed him. Or I would have grabbed him, you know, with I had the pick 56. I really didn't have the option. I would have had to take him at pick 35. I would have had to take him at his new ADP over Gunnar Henderson or like Marcus Semien.
Ooh,
Bo Bichette. Yeah, I can't. I can't take, like, I'm taking a hitter in that range.
Yeah, because I started Ohtani, Olsen, Adelis Garcia, and then fourth round was Yamamoto.
Yeah, so we're, dude, you would have to take him over Garcia, yeah.
I didn't even tell you this. So then fifth round came around. And you know how like every now and then you have that pressure pick where like you're doing three different things at work and you see you're on the clock and you're like, all right, let me just, you know, I'm not even going to look at the auction calculator. I'm just going to go grab the guy that like feels best. I grab my boy, Paul Goldschmidt, fifth round and stop. And I'm like, oh no, I got Matt Olson three rounds earlier. Dude. So I addressed corner infield in the fifth round.
That's right.
And I was like, no. So I'm looking at all these, like, because we talk about it all the time that, like, you will have a hole somewhere, whether it's third or second, shortstop, catcher. And I was like, well, here we go. I'm just donating to charity with my util filled with Otani and now corner infield. So I've been, like, scrambling to address positions, but I'm getting there. I actually like my TGFBI team.
Hey, so, I mean, yeah. it's still a good player, right? And a guy that you believe in. I think you have a lot of shares of Goldschmidt this year.
Yeah, he's probably four out of five.
Yeah.
No, yeah. So that's just funny. We didn't talk about it yet. But yeah, back to the topic. You can tell Steve and I haven't talked in a minute here. I think we love Yamamoto. We're hoping this suppresses the price. Let's move on from there. But I did want to bring up, because we've kind of been talking about the Yamamoto light with Shota Imanaga, which I keep wanting to say Imanaga, with the Cubbies. But holy smokes, Steve, did you see any highlights of him striking out Freddie Freeman for his first K in spring training, an outing where he had five strikeouts in 2 1/3? He did give up a three-run homer, but I think he retired or struck out like the next like three batters or something like that. So Imanaga is one that I wanted to add to this list and just see how much he's moving up. So just kind of doing this in real time.
I got it up. Yeah. His February ADP was 192. His March ADP is 175. So he's gone up like 16 picks, 9%. Overall, so didn't make the cut when I was just formatting it and looking for large movers, but there's still a significant move and something that's worthy to talk about, especially for a guy that we like.
So rank these pitchers, Steve, for you: Brian Wu, Imanaga, Ryan Pepio, because I would love any of them.
I think I would go.
And I think Wu's had a slower start.
Imanaga, Wu, Pepio.
Ooh.
That said, okay. I also like all three of those guys, but I would go Imanaga first.
So you're there with, yeah, because Imanaga does feel like it's going to give you, like the floor is higher, right? In terms of just like volume, the Cubs need him. Like Wu, we don't really know if it looks rough in Seattle, which I know we don't expect it to. They could have Emerson Hancock in his spot for a month and let him get right down in the minors. Like Imanaga just feels like the Cubs will
that's fair. I think that's
roll
him
out every 5 days and see what they got. I'd probably go Imanaga, Pepio, and Wu, but I do like all three of them. So that's a fun group right there. Okay, yeah, I wanted to hit on that one quick. Talk me through the next one, Steve, because this is your boy, and if I don't draft Wyatt Langford, I think it might be this guy next for my Raz Slam pick.
It's Cole Reagans. His February ADP was 105. His March ADP is 83. So a full 20-pick drop.
Wow. That's a percentage jump like you were talking
about. Yeah, yeah. Like that was one where the percentage, even though it was still just quote unquote just a 20 pick drop, the ADP the move was caught in my filter for where to bring this up. That said, there's a lot of reason why that's happened. He was already sort of a wide awake sleeper. As Paul Spohr likes to call them, at pick 100 before this, but in spring he's been absolutely unbelievable. Just the stats, the surface numbers: 5 innings pitched, 4 hits, no walk, 1 walk, 8 strikeouts. But he's also throwing 100 regularly. There was a Lance Brozdowski tweet about one of the pitch that he had where he struck out Zach Neto last week. That was 101 miles an hour with a 20-inch induced vertical break. which he threw like one of those last year. And his average IVB was 15. So if he gets that average IVB up to like 18, which is like the elite territory, like how much better could this guy get? You know, I know Gray at Razzball has written some Schmohawk posts, which is his bus posts, guys that he think are being overdrafted on Cole Reagans. And he cited the sample of August where he wasn't that good and was like, yeah, he broke out. Or in September where he wasn't that good. And his walk rate specifically was an issue. And he was like, you know, if everyone's jumping all over this breakout and accounting for his amazing August, you know, you have to realize that there was some struggles in September, especially with that command, which has been sort of his downfall in the past, even before getting this stuff jump with the move to with the velo increase last year and the move to Kansas mm-hmm. City. But that being said, I mean, the fact that there's only one walk and those five innings pitched, I mean, think about what we're saying here, right? Like, he had one walk and five innings pitched. Like, so like a kind of short start, we're based on that. But it's still exciting to see that there's some improvements. And I always like betting on improvements for guys that have shown the propensity to do that before. Like Reagan's, like, went out and increased all this velocity and did this work a tread to improve his repertoire and work to get to improve his stuff. Like he talked about that with Nick at PitchCon on the Talking Pitching Pod, like just about, you know, the work ethic and how he examines and what he does to get better. So like that makes me believe in a guy even more. So as far as buying in on it, I mean, his old ADP, like the ADP of 107, you know, he's going around guys like Justin Steele, Joe Ryan. Now you would have to pick between like Zach Eflin, Jesus Cesardo, Yuri Perez, Bobby Miller, and pick 80. So it's tough to, you know, make that decision now, but
I think if I want a pitcher,
I'll put him on my queue, and if he's the one left, I'll take him in that range, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So last year Reagan's threw 96 innings. This year he's projected, ATC has him for 160 innings. Steamer is much more ambitious with 177. But 160 would be more than Yuri Perez, I think less than Bobby Miller. I'm pulling that up. Oh no, more than Bobby Miller as well. So Reagan's is actually of that kind of youngster bunch. Reagan's is the volume play. So I actually think, you know my thoughts on Eflin. Unless it's like a best ball, if it's a best ball like Raz Slam or like with an overall, that's where I like Reagan's, because you could have the Shane McClanahan thing where he's just a top five pitcher. Eflin will not be that, but I do think the floor is so, so high for Eflin that like in a TGFBI, I can't endorse Reagan's over Eflin. That's where I draw the line. But I do think that, the more I'm just looking at everything, I think I'm comfortable with him over Yuri and Bobby Miller, but
I think I would crazy. I think I would go Miller, Yuri, and then Reagan's.
Miller's our big. I think that's our biggest divide. He's like my. I don't even know with the 2-month-old baby who had shots today, Steve, if I'm gonna have a chance to do the bold predictions article. But Bobby Miller being a bust would be my one.
That's going against
just because it's going
the grain
against
for everybody. Yeah, I love it.
Everybody. So anyway. No, that's such a cool little pitching pot right there. So it's pick. What's crazy is Reagan's is probably around that Wyatt Langford ADP.
He's around before that. I mean,
okay, yeah,
he's at pick 83. Like Wyatt was at what, pick 100?
That's true. Yeah, they've both moved up. Okay, well, talk about Tarek Skubal, Steve, because this is one that again. I'm kind of fading from the industry. It's not that I don't think what Skubal did was impressive. It's just kind of track record. And to be honest, some of the pitchers around him seem so much more established and proven. I don't know that I was ever buying that Skubal's like a top 10 pitcher, but that maybe that's kind of nearsighted on my part. He's climbing up the board. So talk to me kind of what's behind this and if you're buying into it.
This one we can hit on quickly. I just wanted to talk about it because it's just been a popular name around spring training with how well he's been doing. He was previously at pick 54. He's now at pick 47. So not that like a half round, you know, in 15,
still,
half
you're
round
jumping pitchers drop. There. Yeah.
And he's just been incredible in spring. His fastball sitting above 97. Nick Pollock tweeted it out the other day during his start, I think on Tuesday. Okay. Tariq Skubal is a top 15 pitcher for 2024. Like everybody's buying in. And yeah, it's not like this isn't a March ADP jump. This was just an ADP jump in general. Like the pitcher before him is Zach Gallen. And then it's like, you know, the three top closers in Diaz, Williams, and Hader. But then guys like he's going ahead of guys like Freddie Peralta, Logan Webb, Max Fried, Aaron Nola. Like he's a good round ahead of those guys, right? So there's like
he's never thrown 150 innings.
Yeah, that the argument is volume, and then also the fact that the amazing starts came in the last half of last year and one half against a pretty easy schedule. But there's a clear delineation between like SP1s. Like if you use those closers and NFB ADP is the divider, and Skubal is before them. Like he is being drafted as like the 13th pitcher off the board. Like there's no close 12th because Shohei Ohtani comes up in there in the ADP because he still has pitcher eligibility. So he's being drafted as the 12th starter off the board. Like, so for 12 teams, like, you know, there's, if there's 12 SP1s, he's mm-hmm. one of them, at least per the market.
I want to peek at his projections here because, yeah, he's never thrown above
150. That's another thing that caused the bump. Look at the projections.
His slider doesn't get great whiffs. He does. I mean, the fastball changeup is a killer combo, especially if the fastball's sitting 97, which was not on my radar. Thank you. Mm-hmm. But the innings pitched, Steamer has him at 171. ATC has 156. So honestly, it's very Reagan's-like.
And there has been a slider tweak in the repertoire in spring training, too. You know, with the goal of getting more whiffs, yeah.
I guess that is the path, right, to being like a top five guy. If the slider does take a step and you already have the four-seamer changeup, then it's like, you know, the best possible version of Luis Castillo.
I think I might have like pre, you know, FOMO, like if that's even a term. Like I could see myself passing on Tariq Skubal because like the cost is so high. But then being like, why didn't I just trust the 33% strikeout rate and 4.5% walk rate from last year and the 97-mile-an-hour fastball velocity in spring? Like it's that obvious.
Yeah, the control,
you know, like,
honestly, the control is a great point.
Like, stop thinking about it so much sort of thing. Like, stop worrying about the cost so much might be what I'm telling myself.
I didn't realize he had a .90 whip, too. Yeah, I was wrongfully lumping him in with like that.
I think in shallower leagues, you could absolutely do it. It's totally fine to
make him your SP1.
To make him your SP1.
Yeah, just trust. Yeah.
In like a 12-team league, I'm all about it.
Okay. Jumping around a little bit, want to talk about Jackson Merrill, Steve, because this was one I sent you at a Peoria Chiefs game. I was like watching Jackson Merrill, and then he hit a moonshot homer that was like on Twitter, and I was like, hey, cool, I was at this game. So for the Padres, all of a sudden Jackson Merrill's getting you know, talks that he might break camp as a starting outfielder. Today he had an assist from center field, threw somebody out at home plate. I think I saw Chris Clegg tweet he would guess 80% likelihood that he starts with the MLB team, and he won't start there if he's not going to actually start in the outfield. And he's, you know, because of this, jumping up a little bit. And where is that at?
Yeah, his February ADP was 535, and his March ADP is 434.
Oh, okay. Yep, yep. So I was reading it backwards, yeah. I think.
So he's gone down 100 picks.
So he's jumped 100 picks, yeah. But I would predict it's going to go 100 more because Mike Schilt, manager, talked today about how great his defense is looking. And if this guy starts like 270, 15-15, possibly room for more, you know, this is almost, minus the batting order spot, kind of that, I don't know if it's Jung-Hoo Lee, but just when you're trying to fill out that five outfielder league, you really are looking for guys who can, you know, have some upside, and Jackson Merrill's definitely one of them. So yeah, I think he beats out Cal Mitchell for this job, and I could totally see him being in the late 200s or early 300s by the end of draft season. But yeah, Jackson Merrill, not sure if you wanted to add anything there, Steve, but yeah, he's had a hot spring as well. So Padres Nation is kind of going nuts for Jackson Merrill.
I think the Padres have had a massive hole in their outfield. They kind of only had one outfielder, right, in Fernando Tatis, and they currently have Jose Azucar center field on roster resource, Profar and left. So like, there is definitely some opportunity. And I think before spring, a lot of people were assuming that one of those spots would go to like Jacob Marcy or Graham Pauly, guys who lit the Arizona Fall League on fire.
That's a good point.
Our dynasty league was hoping that this would be Marcy's spot, since we have him in the minors. We took him in our first year player draft this year. I think that was your call of just an underrated guy who was mashing in the minors last year and did really well to the fall league. But Merrill has kind of ran with this job. Roster Resource currently has him penciled in as a starting DH, which I don't think that would. I think, you know, he would be on the roster, but I think he would be playing, you know, left field with how good he's looked defensively. So it's
kind he's of learning like, that. It's worth noting he's learning outfield and like,
yeah, he was a shortstop, right? Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And he's looked good. Like, and this is a team that's still, despite the struggles of last year, despite losing Juan Soto and shedding a lot of payroll, losing Blake Snell, they're still a decent opportunity, I think, for this team to be a wild card team. And I don't think they would be shy about having Merrill start on the opening day roster. It's not a James Wood situation, right? Like the Nationals,
right.
Their only shot is if, hey, maybe we really feel this guy could win Rookie of the Year. The Padres could be like, hey, maybe this guy could be a 3-WAR player for us for like real life, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't think there's would be anything holding him back. I mean, he's a lefty bat in that lineup. I think he could hit as high as like sixth behind Ha-Seong Kim, but ahead of like Campusano and Profar and stuff like that. So, yeah, Jackson Merrill, good name for the list. Got a few more names and going to kick it over to Steve, but we got to take our second ad break. We'll be right back. Okay, so Steve, I leapfrogged over a pitcher there just so we could kind of go back and forth, but talk to me about AJ Puck. This is one that I have some shares of already, so I'm eager to hear what you're seeing here.
It's interesting. He's being stretched out as starter. I think on Wednesday today, as we record this, he pitched 3 innings. And he's increased his repertoire. He's added a new slider, like a bullet gyro slider that he used to throw, that he, you know, in the bullpen he mainly was just fastball sweeper. And that did really... He did really well with that. In 56 innings, he had a 32% strikeout rate and just a 5.4% walk rate. Like, you know, maybe because he wasn't the full-time closer and kind of lost that job earlier in the year, people kind of forgot about him. But there still was a really nice pitcher, albeit in just the 56 innings out of relief. So I'm at least interested. and he's with an organization that has done a pretty good job at developing pitchers, right? So with that, it's got me pretty excited. And to go back to where he's actually been, he was at pick 460 in February, and now he's all the way down to pick 350, so like another 100-point swing. Also, in addition to adding the bullet gyro slider, he's added vertical break IVB on his fastball for Lance Brodowski. He did a nice little write-up on him on his Substack, where he writes up a few pictures each day, each week, with some interesting tidbits. So I'm pretty excited about AJ Puck. I think I drafted him in like a draft and hold, like one of my first drafts in January, as like a closer spec. And now it's kind of turned out. I think we did it in our best ball. And I was like, oh yeah, maybe Puck will steal that job and be a closer in Miami. But now it's, hey, maybe he'll be a starter for them as he stretched out. He's looked pretty good doing it so far in spring.
Yeah. I mean, he's only 28 years old, and you don't have to go too far back when Puck was probably the number one or number two pitching prospect that everyone was buzzing about. When you look at what has happened since he's been up, so much of it has been health, but he's just been kind of forced into the bullpen. Never started a game in the majors. That's just crazy for how much hype there was. But the projection, I mean, he's slated third in that rotation for the Marlins, and every projection system has him for like a 27% strikeout rate, some of them as high as 30. And the walk rate is reasonable, around like 7-8%. So it really comes down to volume. I mean, ERA projections are high threes. You would totally take that. I think this is a really good one, Steve. Where is he going now? This is
pick 348. 350, yeah. I don't know if this is inclusive of today's spring training stats. I'll tell you that in a second. But in five innings pitch, he has 9 strikeouts, three walks, which obviously isn't great, but the 9 strikeouts are awesome, and has only given up 1 hit.
This is a sleeper. Last year.
Yeah, it looks like unless it was a split squad game for Miami, it was yesterday that he pitched, so on Tuesday. So I think that should be inclusive of his three inning start.
7'2" extension and a 96 mile per hour. So that's probably playing up to like 100 mile per hour for hitters. Like that extension is Freddy Peralta type of level. So curious if he's hitting it. I guess last year he was probably hitting the heart of the zone a little bit too much. If he could elevate that with how huge he is and that velocity.
Yeah, it was Monday that he pitched, so this is inclusive of it. He had 6 strikeouts in 3 innings with 2 walks, 1 hit versus the Yankees.
Yeah, I don't want to leave a draft without him. I think he's like a perfect last pitcher to do so. Anyway, yeah, well, I mean,
he went even earlier.
For the record, I'm not interested.
He went even earlier in my TGFBI. He went around like 20 around there. So,
okay, all right, that's good to know. So AJ Puck, we're definitely buying that one on the bounce. Chris Sale, this one, for all the excitement, Steve, his ADP has jumped up from 139 to 112. And I don't know that I can do it, man. I've seen how good he's looking, like the tunneling pitching ninja gifts. Obviously, the Braves brings a ton of excitement of like new environment and win total. And Chris Sale's like the king of pitching well when he gets pissed off. I just don't know that that I trust that we're going to get more than like 120 innings. I guess if you can stomach the IL stints and pair whatever you're getting from Sale with whoever you're adding off the wire, then I kind of get it. But age 35 season, it hasn't been since 2019 that we've seen more than 105 innings. I don't know. I feel like you're in though, Steve, because you love yourself some Chris Sale, right?
Yeah, and I think the price if it stays around where it is, I'm surprised I don't have more shares of Chris Sale at ADP 140, ADP 180, where he's going even like in the dead of winter. I guess I wish I did. But I think if you do take a guy, and Chris Sale would probably be my second pitcher in a lot of times where a lot of people he would be his third. But if you do have a solid innings guy up top, which a lot of those guys I think you can count on unless it's like Glasnow or maybe even a Skubal. But if you do have like, you know, Gallen or even like Logan Webb, Fried or Nola with your first picture, I would be all over taking sort of a second upside shot at Chris Sale. I guess a lot of times my first pitchers have been like Yamamoto or like Yuri or Bobby Miller, so I don't necessarily have that luxury to go for for the high risk guy like Chris Sale. I'm finding myself more in like the, you know, even like a Hunter Green, who may not have the best health grade, but at least there's like some more solid strikeouts, or like Chris Bassett, boring bin. So that's kind of where I've been, but I still like Chris Sale, and I think that even if it is just 120 innings, it's going to be really good 120 innings.
So
the Braves extended him too, right? As soon as they traded for him, they extended him. That's a good organization. Yeah. Organization extending him. Like, they wouldn't do that if the physical gave them any
worries. So you're probably taking the under on his ratio projections, because they fall pretty much at like a 380 ERA.
Yeah, I mean,
like
380 is still really good, right? But yeah, I could see him having a low 3s ERA.
And then like a 120 whip. I guess here's my point. Where he was before on ADP, I was leaning toward a Michael King because I feel like King should get you there's just less of the health. And King's, when you look at like K minus walk, you're getting a little more strikeouts, presumably, yeah, with King.
King's also, we went through it. Like, what? How many times did he throw over five innings last year? Two times? Like, right? Something like that.
That's true. But I guess it's more like opportunity versus your arm falling off. And King's,
yeah,
like,
sure,
28 versus 35. Like, yeah. And King's now 50 picks cheaper, I guess, is my point.
Yeah.
So it's, that's not true, that I don't like the roll of the dice on Sale. I just don't know that I'm personally going to be in on, because now who are his, I want to see who his peers are now at pitcher. I'm not huge on Tanner Bibee, so I'd be okay with that one. Dylan Cease, he's another big question mark.
Yeah, I think I might lean Cease for innings, because it's a similar, potentially higher, high strikeout guy. What about Chris Sale or Joe Musgrove?
Oh, I'm taking Musgrove for sure.
Chris Sale or
Sonny Gray's interesting.
Sonny Gray, yeah, that was my next one.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. But Sonny Gray, now he's got an issue,
yep,
to start with,
yep,
just reminding us, yep, why we're thin with a hamstring. So cool. But yeah, I think it is a cool cliff. You know, that, like, if you can get Sale at the end, if you need pitching help, grab him around like 105, 110, because after that, it is a little bit before your next pitching group, with Sonny Gray and Bueller. Gray's going to keep falling, and then it's all the way to Michael King at 135. So anyway, yeah. Do you have any shares yet of Sale?
I do not, but I would not be opposed.
Yeah, me either. I wouldn't mind a little bit of like, it would be glorious if you could get 140 innings. I'm betting against it. I hope for baseball we get to see it, though. This last one, Steve, I had to throw out because Nando DeFino on our PitchCon episode threw out Miguel Andujar as like a sleeper. And I was like, huh? Like, with the Athletics, he's not even projected to start. Like, what a wild card play there. ADP 661 in February, and Nando's just kind of throwing it out. Well, he had two homers today. And his ADP in March has shot up from 661 to 583. He's slated to platoon with J.J. Bleda and Seth Brown. And Seth Brown will get the at-bats. But I was just kind of interested because age 29, he hasn't really, he never really turned out the way we thought we would see him, at least for a little bit in New York. And now kind of pressure's off with the Athletics. Again, it's a very deep format one, but when you're looking for any help that you can get, Andujar, I mean, a couple of one of the homers today was an absolute shot. And I think, is he third base eligible too? Because he's out. I know he's got outfield, but let me see if I can see. Oh, just outfield in the NFBC. But yeah, that was one I just wanted to throw on here because it was enough of a wild card that I was like, yeah, this is a late name that I want to keep an eye on.
Nando has a great skill, and he did it a bunch in on the old Athletic podcast, Under the Radar with DVR and Ian Kahn. That was one of my favorite shows. And that's like looking at older guys in the minors stats. I think he called it like MILB, like, you know, MILB.com. I think it was jokingly called like MILB hunting. Just like looking for older guys outperforming in the minors. Like, you know, you just gloss over a guy like Miguel Andujar, and like you look at his numbers in the minors over these last few years, and it's been really good. And then you look at that, you know, the 2018 where did he win Rookie of the Year? Or was like second
homers,
in voting. Yeah, 27 homers, was really good, and like looking to
man,
be.
I forgot
like
how good that season was.
Yeah, he was
297,
855 OPS, 27 homers. You know, I think an underrated aspect of it is, you know, people think of 2019 as the happy fun ball, bouncy ball season, and I think there was also like it was definitely going on in 2018 too. But you know, he still continued to hit really well in the minors. He had a 941 OPS, a 135 WRC plus with 16 homers and 103 games in AAA last year for the Pirates. In 2022, he had an 817 OPS with a 113 WRC plus and 71 games, AAA games in the Yankees organization. 2021 it was only 16 games, but he had a 1026 OPS. Like, he's absolutely crushed the ball. And sure, maybe he's a quad A player, and maybe that 1 year in 2018 was an aberration. But I think it's still worth a late round flyer, if not out of respect for one of my favorite guys in the industry, in Nando DeFina.
Well, I think we do have him. I want to say.
Yeah, we took it. Took him in his honor.
So we got,
to share. Yeah, for sure.
Nice. That's my wild card to round out with. Did you want to add anything, Steve, as my voice with my allergies and baby is fading? Do you want to add anything on forwards?
I don't think we necessarily needed to. Like, I put together this nice list too, but there's a lot of reasons why these guys fall. It's like injury, you know. A closers kind of have been bumped down a little bit because I think, you know, in draft
unsigned
free agents, injuries, closers, I think get bumped down a little bit because in draft and hold, which happens more often in February, you're not able to make weak moves or do any fab. Same thing with catchers and second catchers. I think those are bumped up, artificially in, not artificially, but just as the nature of the style of game, and the fact that you need to grab those two catchers because you can't make any moves in draft and hold. Same with catchers, like, you know. And then there's just some other guys, like, you know, Judge has fallen a pick, like, for whatever reason. You know, Acuna was in there too, just because I think he didn't go anywhere but one before that injury scare. But I don't know. Guys like JD Martinez at pick 277 now. I know he doesn't have a position. He's util only. He doesn't have a home yet, and it's kind of dependent on there. But he was really, really good last year. And I know strikeouts are a much bigger part of his game. He has he's much more inclined to swing and miss now. But he was still a very productive hitter last year for the Dodgers, and I know that it's going to be a lineup downgrade. But if he does sign in like a favorable ballpark or just a pretty good lineup. Yeah.
I heard Texas is a possibility. Mets, Phillies, I think. Texas or Phillies would be very interesting.
I mean, yeah, it was a 31% strikeout rate, but he's still a 271 and had, a 135 WRC plus with 33 homers and 103 RBIs. Like, that's pretty dang good.
Well ahead of that ADP, for sure. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, another name on this list, because there's a couple other ones we liked, but Shane Baz, I know there was a news cycle that they were going to kind of be cautious with him, or cautious in working him up or something. And we don't know if that's minors or just like, you know, a three inning start here or there, but is it a buying opportunity for you that he slid from 235 to 260?
So
or are you kind of scared off from Baz?
There was a big scare when one of those, like the Roto World or Roto Wire news updates was like, Rays are hoping for Shane Baz to contribute later on this summer. Like, and it's like, do you mean like the actual summer, like August, or do you just mean like post spring training, like,
yeah,
you know, maybe May, and that, you know, that's quote unquote summer. Then also his bullpen, I believe, was pushed back due to some soreness or an oblique issue. So that's not going to help his ADP. I think that was a relatively recent piece of news. But I think that that there is a buying opportunity. I think people are panicked because of that sort of broad later on this summer quote. Whereas, you know, had he progressed to like actually pitching in a Grapefruit League game over the next few weeks, that could have been just a quick dip in the ADP. But now that he's pushed back, maybe that's not going to be the case. So maybe that has gone away a little bit. The one other guy here, and it's a guy that I have, I think, now two shares of, and guys that you've liked, that we've liked, Christian Walker. Like, he was hitting the hand, like missed a game, but I think he's like back. Like, he dropped like almost 10 picks, maybe just because of that, maybe because he has a little red flag next to his name, but I'm finding myself, if I don't have a first baseman, taking Christian Walker in round like six a lot.
Yeah. I mean, a bruised hand, like he should be back in no time.
Yeah.
33 homers last year, 103 RBIs. And the thing about Walker is kind of a Goldschmidt light, because the 11 steals there, or like kind of prime Goldschmidt light, I should say. But 33 homers, 11 steals, overlooked. And yeah, like you said, When you can get him as kind of the parachute pick, like his min picks the past week are 110, so even later than sixth round, that's more like eighth round.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's a really good one.
Yeah.
Good one to call out. Cool. All right. Well, that rounds us out, guys. Very excited to keep at it with you guys. Of course, we're here every week leading up to kind of the opening day light, and then proper opening day, of which I've taken off work, Steve. So
nice.
The big Thursday, the 28th, and then Good Friday and Easter weekend after that. So going to be fantastic March vibes. Until then, we will be on Twitter at WinsBovePod. You guys can follow us individually. I'm at Van_Verified. Steve is at Stav8818. On behalf of Mr. Steve Giswelli, that sums up our first March show. Thanks for talking baseball with us.
Two more shows of us not talking about real baseball, which is cool.
Can't wait.
Thanks, guys. Later.